Robert Scott Bell Show.
Robert Scott Bell Show.
Good morning, Vietnam!
Rise and shining. Wakey waking.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning to you.
And you.
And you.
Robert Scott Bell.
Gentlemen, can I please have your attention? And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
The Robert Scott Bell Show.
Robert Scott Bell Show.
The one guy who won tonight is the happiest guy on this planet right now. It's Ron Paul because he's the only one actually saying what he believes.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Robert Scott Bell.
At least 15 high school students are suffering from an illness that causes them to have uncontrollable twitching and verbal outbursts.
Contaminated rock and fill and soil was used to build the new school.
Robert Scott Bell.
Paula Deen, the butter queen, kept her diagnosis of type 2 diabetes a secret.
You waited until you got a big pharmaceutical company to pay you.
Taking on bureaucrats and corporations that would stand in the way of health freedom and making sense out of medical propaganda. The voice of health, freedom, and liberty, Robert Scott Bell.
Good advanced medicine morning to you, Super Don, and everybody out there. Welcome to the Robert Scott Bell Show today. Ready for a rock and roll week?
Absolutely. Every week.
Every week, rock and roll week. This week we start out in Nevada. As by the way, Advanced Medicine Monday continues in a great way. We got a power-packed show. Dr. Nick Gonzalez and Dr. Rashid Batar. No other show could contain both of those guys in 1 2-hour session. So we're going to be blasting it out all over planet Earth. Great stuff. And we got the word definitely, 313,000 show downloads on top of the live listens last month, January. We are growing.
And now, course, you know what? How what? Come I wasn't privy to that information before we went on the air? That's awesome.
I got a secret text from Mike Adams. He sent it.
313. That is more than last time.
Yeah. On
we
top
are
of,
growing.
On top of the live listens and et cetera. Really, it's going and growing. And it's sort of like the Ron Paul revolution, the phenomenon that is growing slowly and steadily. Although, I mean, in some ways, we're growing faster than we could have imagined. But some people, Don, are disappointed by what happened in Las Vegas and Nevada, the entire state, because we finally, this morning, know the results. How many days does it take to count a few thousand votes?
Yes, people in Nevada can count, I think.
Yeah.
But, yes, the results finally came in, and Ron Paul did come in third place. You know, a lot of us were hoping that he would end up edging out Gingrich, but he didn't. But we're only talking about a difference of 781 votes between them. So really, you know, it was virtually a tie for second place in Nevada.
And overall, the voters were down. The turnout was down for the Nevada caucuses, as well as in general. The turnout has been down overall, which is does not bode well for the Republican candidate unless it is Ron Paul. That's another thing we can learn from this. If you're going to rely just upon Republicans, it's not going to be enough. You're going to have to garner the independents, and that still is the argument for Ron Paul. So don't lose heart, anybody, although this is bigger than any one election. A revolution is beyond one election. And, in fact, did you see ABC this week with, what's the guy, Stephanopoulos?
I did, and it was really good. We've got a couple of clips from that interview, and this is something that a lot of the people that are upset and depressed from the turnout in Nevada, you have to understand that even Ron Paul gets that what's going on here with this campaign is bigger than just a win. And Stephanopoulos said, hey, you know, what is it you're expecting to accomplish here? What is it you're trying to do by running this campaign? And Ron Paul, once again, as he always does, beautifully explained what it was that the purpose of the campaign is in addition to winning the nomination.
Well, let's get that perspective right now.
And you've always said that your campaign is much more of a crusade, much more of a mission. But what exactly do you hope to achieve? What kind of stamp do you expect to put on the Republican platform this year?
Well, the first thing you want to achieve is get as many votes as you can and get as many delegates and set your target high. And, of course, you set it for victory, but you have to live within the real world. But in the campaign, that is what the goal is to galvanize people, energize people, get them out and vote. But some people want it either or. You either believe in something and you're not in the race, or you're in the race and you don't believe anything. I don't understand why you can't believe in something and still be in the race. This is the way I ran my congressional campaigns. And I was able to stick to my principles, vote that way, challenge the establishment, get reelected. So it's a bigger challenge, of course, to do this in a nation. But we've done this, you know, in the early primaries like Iowa and New Hampshire. And we've been able to achieve that to a degree. But that is my goal, to make sure that campaigning and political activity represents true beliefs and a true understanding of what we're doing, rather than saying superficially, how do you win the race? How do you become the nominee?
Well, that
and that was such a slam on the media, because that's what they always focus on is, well, how are you going to win?
Right.
How are you going to end up becoming the nominee? And see, it's obvious to Ron Paul, he wants to be the nominee, but at the same time, it's his true beliefs, his principles, and what he stands for is the driving force behind what he's doing.
Don, you're right. I mean, this is a bit, this is so much bigger than these pinheaded media types, if you will, these pseudo-intellectuals in the media like Stephanopoulos. They really don't get it. I mean, they're paid shills to not get it, of course. Maybe they're smart enough to, but they're paid not to. So they know what to do, what to say, what not to say. That's the controlled media. That's what we do differently here, and a few other shows out there are doing, that literally are not constrained by the large moneyed interests, the pharmaceutical, global, military, industrial complexes, for instance. And that's the kind of thing that we're revealing, and Ron Paul is shaken up. That's why the establishment, Republican and Democrat, are frightened about this movement. And they claim not to understand it. Maybe they don't. I mean, they've been so devoid of principle for so long. To have a guy come around with principles is sort of like looking at it into another reality that you don't recognize. You don't even know the language for it.
They're so fascinated with it when they get him on. They're just kind of like, we just don't understand. What are you doing? Because they're more like sports commentators than they are political analysts. They're looking at this right. Like it's a horse race, and it's just like, I don't understand. You're not running the play where, you know, the guy's going to fake the guy out over here, and you're going to throw the pass. You know, no, that's not what he's doing. You know, he's doing this for honest reasons. And if you look at the interesting thing that I find every time that there's a caucus or mm-hmm. a primary, that if you look at the exit polls, almost consistently, when they ask people who is the true conservative in the race, they always pick Ron Paul. They don't vote for him, but when they're asked that question, who is the true conservative, it's always Ron Paul. Well, and that's the thing that stands out with him. He's the true conservative in the race.
We still got a little bit of work to do. We recognize that. But a revolution in the midst of which we were in, is something that is happening over time. We'll look back and we'll say, man, did that happen fast. But a lot of times, you know, on the Daily Poll, our friends there are frustrated. Is there vote fraud? And yes, there may be. I wouldn't dispute the possibility. But the reality is they're going to pull out every dirty trick they can to prevent this revolution from completing itself. They cannot stop it. Just like an idea whose time has come, as Ron Paul has said, no standing army has the capability to stop it, no matter what the technology is. So there's another clip here from ABC News this week with Stephanopoulos.
Oh, and this is Stephanopoulos once again trying to ask him, because that first answer apparently wasn't good enough for him. He didn't quite get it. So he asks him again, well, so what kind of impact, what change are you going to make on the party?
I'm taking you at that point, and that's why I'm trying to get at the deeper question. You said back in 2008 that you wanted to make a permanent mark, be a permanent presence on the American political landscape. And do you think you've been able to do that, and what changes have you actually effected?
Yeah, I do, but I don't take all the credit for it. But there's been a big change in this country, because there's a different understanding now. There's a lot more people talking about free market economics rather than Keynesian welfareism and interventionism. So there's a large segment. Intellectually, that is the case. But among the young people, there is a revolution, an intellectual revolution going on with the young people. And there are people who have sat on the sidelines for years. The independents that I talk to, obviously we're not in a large majority right now when the election come, but anybody who cares about what I'm talking about has to come to the campuses. Last night we had in a small college in Minnesota with 1,300 people coming out, and they're energized. It has not been translated into an absolute political change, but believe me, the intellectual revolution going on, and that has to come first before you see the political changes, and that's where I'm very optimistic.
Here's a guy who's an absolute student of history, as you laid it out there, Don, amazingly so, that an intellectual revolution has to occur first before these other things. Just as he said, the American electorate has to look at government differently in order for us to be victorious in the sense of within any given election. But, you know, as I'm listening to this and I'm thinking about some of the things I'm planning to talk about today with Dr. Batara and Dr. Gonzalez, I think Ron Paul is, he's inspiring people to be better. He's inspiring people to be more honorable because of his actions, even more than anything he says, because what he says is so aligned with what he does that he is actually inspiring people to live better lives. I've heard people say that he's inspired me to be a better Christian, right? I thought I understood Christianity, but now I'm a better Christian. Now, Ron Paul doesn't go out and try to convert people to Christianity. He just simply lives the teachings as he perceives and believes them to be. And now other people are saying, hey, this guy's inspiring me in so many ways. So you could be Jewish, you could be in the New Age movement, you could be anything, and you're going to be inspired by this guy to live a better life based on his life.
Absolutely. And you have to also look at who it is that he's inspiring. And he said, it's the young people. And that's what's going to make the difference as time goes on. It's the young people. Those are going to be the people. They're going to be the leaders, the people. They're going to be running for local offices. And, you know, that's what's going to make a difference. And you know, we'll see as time goes on.
And that's why no matter what happens this election cycle, and we are rooting and pushing and pulling and all that we got to do for Ron Paul, no matter what happens, the revolution is on. It can't be contained. It's not going to be set back. And so inevitably we see the change, and you know, we be the change, we are the change, etc. But that's why I'm confident for the future, despite the hardships and you know, the argument could be made it's mental illness. The environment is affecting the mental illness genes of Americans.
Mass hysteria.
We don't all get it yet. No, we get it here on the Robert Scott Bell Show, and I'm so grateful that all of you are here and growing every day on the United States and World of Health Talk Radio, naturalnewsradio.com. Enter your email address. You'll get your daily updates there. RobertScottBell.com for all the latest and greatest updates, as well as the link to the new vaccine seminar. It has gone live if you haven't seen it yet. And, of course, say thanks because we got Dr. Nick Gonzalez and Dr. Rashid Batara coming up. Dr. Nick wants to talk a little bit about some biblical stuff. He was upset at Obama, as I am with the right on these things. We'll see how that ties together. And, of course, silver. Silver's in the news as an oncolytic agent. We'll explain that as well. Stay with us. Lots more healing to go.
The Robert Scott Bell Show.
Hello, this is Jonathan Wagner. We have an internet website, www.choosetobehealthy.com, that carries many of the products discussed on Robert's show, including 100% whole food chromium and selenium, silica, as well as sovereign silver and Nordic naturals. Choosetobehealthy.com features the Rolls Royce of probiotics. It's Dr. O'Hara's probiotics. Dr. O'Hara, a world-renowned microbiologist, formulated a unique probiotic that blends ancient Japanese fermentation methods with 21st century technology. No refrigeration is needed. Dr. O'Hara's probiotics contains the strongest lactic acid bacteria known to man based on scientific laboratory research. 6.25 times stronger. Quite simply, it works and works very well. So go to our website, www.choosetobehealthy.com, or call us toll-free, 866-424-1077. That's 866-424-1077. We're here to help.
For thousands of years, silver has played an essential role in safeguarding human health. Robert Scott Bell Show listeners know that Sovereign Silver, bioactive silver hydrosol, is the purest and most effective form of silver available. Only Sovereign Silver contains the smallest and most active particles in every bottle, each batch rigorously safety tested to guarantee the highest quality. At only 10 parts per million, Sovereign Silver outperforms other colloidal silvers 50 times more concentrated. Sovereign Silver acts faster than echinacea, oil of oregano, and other immune products. Tastes like water and has more uses than anything else for the immune system. And Sovereign Silver now comes in a topical first aid gel. Use Sovereign Silver gel on cuts, scrapes, minor burns, bug bites, itching, eczema, diaper rash, and more. Sovereign Silver is the number one selling silver brand in the U.S. For a free information packet to order or for a store near you, call 888-328-8840. That's 888-328-8840 or visit SovereignSilver.com.
Taking on bureaucrats and corporations that would stand in the way of health freedom. Here's Robert.
Ron Paul! Ron Paul! Mitt Romney! Ron Paul! Ron Paul! Ron Paul! Ron Paul!
And that came from a late night caucus Saturday night in Las Vegas, Nevada. That was actually a special caucus for those who were religiously inclined to honor the Sabbath on a Saturday. And that evening, this guy, Sheldon Adelson, who's basically funding the super PAC for Newt Gingrich, put that on hoping Gingrich would win. And it turns out Ron Paul, I think, was 2-1 over Romney and even more than that over Newt Gingrich. And it brings to light some very interesting questions. And my dear friend, brilliant as he is in so many ways, Dr. Nick Gonzalez returns for some serious advanced medicine and advanced political medicine Monday as we start out together. Dr. Nick, welcome back.
Robert, always great to be on your show. I really appreciate you having me back.
Well, it's always a lot of fun, and I can't think of a better way that I got such a power-packed Monday when I have you and Dr. Bitar on. It's great. Everything else, we just coast downhill from there. So we were talking off the air last time we were on the air, actually, about obviously we talk about political healing, the campaign, Ron Paul. What was interesting, in addition to what we just heard about how well Ron Paul did at this religiously inclined caucus in Las Vegas, was that the media portrayed this as, oh, well, they just must have broken in and stolen the election, you know, there, as opposed to when Romney or Gingrich does well. Oh, wow, looks how his supporters came out and organized and supported him.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing. Ron can't win even when he wins, but his supporters know what the truth is, and he did very well yesterday at that special caucus, and he's to be congratulated, and his organizers are supposed to be congratulated, because that's what people are supposed to do at caucuses and primaries, organize for the person they support. Somehow, when Ron Paul does it effectively, people get criticized him for that. It's kind of an interesting situation.
Yes. And even beyond that, Dr. Nick, when we talk about, okay, here's a religious group, right, the devout, whether they be Seventh-day Adventist, Jewish, whatever, and certain Christian sects also believe the Sabbath is on a Saturday, so they might not be able to participate. So they held a late night one, which is cool. I think it's great. But the fact that, you know, Ron Paul and his supporters came out in that way and said, hey, you know, we really need to be rethinking our foreign policy, that it's not a Christian thing to do, or even Judeo-Christian, to just slaughter your enemies before they do something to you, right? That's preemptive war.
Yeah, it's very interesting to hear Obama earlier this week quote scripture, or actually misuse scripture, where he said that from those who are given much, much is expected. But he took it all out of context. He was using it to support high taxation. Of course, there's nothing in the Bible, either the Old or New Testament, that supports taxation from a secular government, and we essentially are a secular government, though we have certainly Judeo-Christian roots. And if you actually look at that statement, which is in Luke 42, it's the end of a parable where Christ is talking about how we have to be alert, because at that point, the whole purpose of the New Testament was to announce the coming of the Jewish Messiah, Christ, who, as predicted in Old Testament prophecy, would come as the Son of God, the perfect King, and restore Israel to its greatness. That's what the Gospels are really all about, the restoration of the Jewish kingdom with Christ as the perfect King in charge, and he would remake the earth perfectly. And in that parable in Luke 42, Jesus is teaching that the Jewish nation, because he was talking to Jews at that time, not to Gentiles, really have to be alert and aware, because at some point when they didn't expect Christ would come and restore the nation, and if they weren't prepared, they would be really punished for it. And he was basically saying the Jewish nation, as the chosen people, had been given much, but with that were enormous amounts of responsibility, not only for their own nation, but for all nations. As it says in Genesis, all nations would be blessed through the Jewish nation. And the whole purpose of the gospel and that Luke parable is that Christ, the perfect Jewish king, would come, restore Israel to perfection. All nations, like the U.S., would be blessed as Israel became the perfect nation it was meant to be, as per Old Testament prophecy. How he can take that and twist it into increasing taxation on the rich is ridiculous. And one of the things liberals do all the time is they imply that the scripture teaches us that we're supposed to rob from the rich and give to the poor. And you and I have discussed this. In fact, I even think I said it on one of your shows. The Ten Commandments, which appear in Exodus 20, specifically have a commandment, number 10, that says, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's goods, period. That means you're not supposed to have envy for your other people's possessions. And God actually, if you're going to quote Scripture and you have to actually look into Scripture, God had absolutely nothing against wealth. In fact, Abraham, the father of the Israelite nation, was rewarded for his loyalty to God with great wealth. Abraham was one of the richest people of his time, and that was not looked at as a bad thing. It was looked at as a reward from God. David, who was the seventh son, the least likely son ever to become anything of a sheep herder, became the first of the Davidic dynasty in Israel, and he was rewarded, the shepherd's son, with great wealth.
Well,
his son Solomon was rewarded with great wealth. That was a reward from God.
Yes, so if I may, Dr. Nick, what I'm thinking, you know, is we're tying in the religious issues with politics, which is always makes for an exciting mix of discussion.
And dangerous, always dangerous to
yes,
do that.
Yes, but we don't fear to tread where it may be dangerous, and that's why we love to do this together. I think that's why I wanted to bring out the opening the way we did, is to show that, both on the so-called right, pseudo-right, and the religious left, so to speak, which have worshipped basically modern medicine and all of its criminality and corruption, and abandon real spirituality, in my opinion. Probably we share this opinion. And as you brought up the Obama thing, saying, well, I'm going to use Scripture to say how we really need to so-called soak the rich. Never mind that another one of those Ten Commandments is thou shalt not steal. And people go, well, what does that have to do with anything? Well,
that's right.
By the point of a government gun, you are thieving from your neighbor to provide for you or somebody else you believe needs it more. And I think the admonition that we would have, whether it be Hebrew Scriptures or New Testament, from Jesus is just simply, it's volunteerism. It's not the force of a gun. Because if it takes a gun to your head to be charitable, is that really charity? And I think that's also misunderstood by the left, who are demanding that the wealthy pay their fair share, which is a concept out of admiralty law, the law of the seas, not the law of the land. That's another issue altogether, too.
You're absolutely correct. Nowhere in Scripture, Old or New Testament, which liberals these days seem to be quoting ad infinitum, does it say it's perfectly okay by coercion to take from people who have and give to people who don't. In fact, the Tenth Commandment forbids that. And the commandment you referred to, thou shalt not steal, the Sixth Commandment, also ties into that. And God had no problem with wealthy being wealthy. What he did have a problem with is people being greedy and not using their wealth appropriately. Basically, mm-hmm. every gift we have is a gift from God, as with Solomon or David or Abraham. This is a gift from God, and we have to use it wisely and intelligently. And of course, in a free market, to get political now from the scriptural, in a free market enterprise system, wealthy people always do good for people. People become wealthy, and this is often forgotten, in a free market enterprise system because they provide something that makes our life better. I don't like Bill Gates' politics. I don't like vaccinations the way he does. I'm not in for population control the way he is. But he earned his $57 billion, not because he was stealing it from people the way liberals portray wealthy people do, but because he provided a product that all of us use. We use his Microsoft products every day. It made our lives better. That's why he's wealthy. In a free market enterprise system, you don't get wealthy because you steal or you have a gun to someone's head. It's because you create a product that makes our lives better and people are mm-hmm. willing to pay for it. That's in the Judeo-Christian philosophy. That's in the Judeo-Christian tradition mm-hmm. where wealth is accumulated because people are doing good for their fellow sure. man. And that in a sense is charity, because Bill Gates, again, I don't agree with his politics, but he created wealth throughout his company. Thousands of people became millionaires off of Microsoft, just the way they are now off of Facebook. And this is, you couldn't have greater charity than that. They created, and they didn't, it wasn't distributed to them. They earned it because they provided a product that we all
like. And by the way, Dr. Nick, the government didn't come in and force Microsoft to share all of that wealth, and any more than it forced the social network, as they say, Facebook, to do it. Or a story that I covered last week on the air here, a real happy, upbeat story of an Australian man, a businessman who developed a transportation bus company, who sold it for hundreds of millions and was giving his employees that had stuck with him for years thousands to hundreds of thousands of dollars. Just because in the government, there was no forceful, the Australian government makes you redistribute your wealth if you're a wealthy businessman. He did it of his own accord, and I think that's what we're talking about with true charity. And in turn, as we open this with the pseudo-right that believe they're conservative, they're not. They're wasting the nation's resources on offense and nation-building rather than having a true defensive system, are also equally in violation of what we would call concepts, whether you call them religious law, Judeo-Christian, or even spiritual law. These are things that are happening on all sides of the political spectrum. And if I take it into the so-called the fairy tales of Robin Hood, right? We all know the story of Robin Hood, and they often use that, stealing from the rich to give to the poor. Never mind, that story was about the king stealing from everybody, and the poor included, stealing from them. And Robin Hood was just taking the money back and giving it back to those who had been stolen from.
Robin Hood was the ultimate free market capitalist in the traditions of Ayn Rand. Of course, didn't live by that time, because he was taking tax money from the king, who was using it to aggrandize himself, and giving it to the back to the people who earned it. Something like a successful business like Microsoft is the exact opposite of that. You know, when Bill Gates, he was a college dropout. When he set up, it's an interesting story to look at how Microsoft happened and what effect it had on Seattle and Washington State. Mm-hmm. After Boeing collapsed, Seattle was basically a collapsed city. People were living on welfare. There was no industry. He came along and out of nothing, it wasn't distributed to him. There was nothing there. Out of his own ingenuity, intelligence, and creativity, created this enormous business, revived not only Seattle but Washington State, made it a hub for the development of the, you know, the 21st century internet technology. And again, I don't agree with his politics, but it's amazing what he did. He created something out of nothing. He created wealth out of nothing. And in so doing, he provided us a product which we wanted, and that's how they paid for it. In the Robin Hood story, the king was stealing from people,
yes,
for his own, so he could live like a king. And Robin Hood was taking that tax money taken through coercion and giving it back. So actually, Robin Hood should be the liberals' greatest nightmare, because he would at gunpoint or arrowhead point, yes, take the tax money from Obama and give it back to us who paid it.
Yes. Yeah, well, it's such an overlooked aspect of that parable, that tale, that story. And in terms of what you brought up with Obama using scripture to justify taxation on the wealthy, so to speak, there are ways to do so without, let's say, claiming ownership of 100% of the fruits of your labor, which is the whole basis of the income tax, which is an anti-American kind of concept. And there's a lot in history who argue that the 16th Amendment didn't actually change anything in law. That's another story. But the reality is there are ways to go about taxation that are lawful and truly voluntary by use taxes, imports, impost excises, etc., that don't require ownership of all life, like the graduated income tax, which is a basis of the Communist Manifesto.
Yeah, it is. And Marx was a great fan of a graduated income tax. He thought that was a way to gradually evolve towards socialism, which is what's happening now. What a lot of Americans, in fact, what a lot of politicians seem to forget, of course, that we didn't have an income tax until 1913. We became, again, this country was a wilderness, you know, 400 years ago. We became, by 1913, one of the most prominent, powerful, and industrial successful countries in the history of the world. We were the most successful country in the history of the world. We had enormous industrial might. There was enormous wealth here. Without an income tax, and the smaller the government, the freer people were to express their creativity, to develop, like Thomas Edison, new products that made our lives better, that people were willing to pay for. We didn't need an income tax, because the country kind of ran itself with a small government that basically, mm-hmm, as Ron Paul said, should do basically two things: enforce contracts and protect us from physical harm. Mm-hmm. Physical harm, that's what it should really be doing, not managing the economy or trying to create wealth, which it can't do. So we rose to great prominence in terms of wealth and industrial capability without an income tax. And in fact, it's the income tax that over the last 80 years has gradually brought us down to the point where now we're becoming a second-rate power, mm-hmm, as our creativity, imagination, innovation are being crushed by regulation and by the stealing of money by the government to fulfill its own political aims.
Right. Remember that in an income tax, they own 100%. They dictate to you, or get to decide how much you get to keep, as opposed to the other way around. Oh my gosh, look how much I'm getting back at the end of the year. Excuse me?
It's funny. I was reading an interview with some government official who said, "We want our money back," talking about taxation as if it was his to start with.
Right.
They're so brainwashed in the bureaucracies in Washington, they actually think our earned income is theirs and we're taking from their money.
Yes.
We're taking from their pot. This was actually a high-ranking official in the Obama
amazing
administration who said, "We want our money back." Want your money back? This
Excuse
is
me.
Our money. It isn't yours.
Yeah, I was talking with Dr. Batar last week, in fact, about this idea of taxation and how we talk in terms of physiological and emotional health. You can talk about being taxed physically, right? I'm exhausted. I've been weakened. I've been wiped out. Emotionally taxed, right? That concept is of depletion, not one of uplifting. You know, and I think that's an important concept when we talk about healing. And we're going to talk more about healing. Dr. Nick Gonzalez is kicking it off on Advanced Medicine Monday with me here today on the Robert Scott Bell Show. Check out all the links at robertscottbell.com. We'll talk about some physiological, emotional healing in addition to the political and religious issues we covered. Oh my goodness, can you handle it? Well, I certainly can. I love it. And we'll be back with Dr. Nick Gonzalez after this.
Since the 1920s, people around the world have been using radio frequencies to safeguard the health of themselves and their families. Through this tested technology, pioneered by Royal Raymond Rife, researchers have found that specific radio frequencies can eliminate viruses, bacteria, molds, and parasites without harming normal healthy cells. Frequency technology could help millions now suffering from various infections, even arthritis, herpes, Lyme disease, and other painful chronic conditions. The BCX Ultra Frequency Instrument has been developed over a period of 30 years. The BCX Ultra is one of the most powerful healing tools ever. Turn ill health around. Enjoy life again. Start learning about the BCX Ultra today. Visit bioelectricsforhealth.com or call 1-800-936-6240. That's 1-800-936-6240. Call today and start the healing.
For thousands of years, silver has played an essential role in safeguarding human health. Robert Scott Bell Show listeners know that Sovereign Silver Bioactive Silver Hydrosol is the purest and most effective form of silver available. Only Sovereign Silver contains the smallest and most active particles in every bottle, each batch rigorously safety tested to guarantee the highest quality. At only 10 parts per million, Sovereign Silver outperforms other colloidal silvers 50 times more concentrated. Sovereign Silver acts faster than echinacea, oil of oregano, and other immune products. Tastes like water and has more uses than anything else for the immune system. And Sovereign Silver now comes in a topical first aid gel. Use Sovereign Silver gel on cuts, scrapes, minor burns, bug bites, itching, eczema, diaper rash, and more. Sovereign Silver is the number one selling silver brand in the U.S. For a free information packet to order or for a store near you, call 888-328-8840. That's 888-328-8840 or visit sovereignsilver.com.
Hey there, this is Mike. Got a couple of things you may want to check out. Did you know about the website counterthink.com? These are some really hilarious, freedom-oriented, health-oriented, even political cartoons that you got to check out. counterthink.com. And if you want to know what's in your food, go check out foodinvestigations.com, where you've got a bunch of free mini documentaries, little videos there that you can watch that will show you what's in your food and what's not in your food. We talk about Total Blueberry Pomegranate Cereal made by General Mills. Did you know it has no blueberries in it and no pomegranates? We got the video right there on foodinvestigations.com. And if you really want to know what's in your food, your medicine, your personal care products, and so on, head over to naturalnews.com. We're publishing about 12 articles a day now, everything from healing superfoods to the dangerous chemicals in your products, foods, and medicines. naturalnews.com. Check it out.
Information is so good, it requires no expiration date. The Robert Scott Bell Show.
Continuing now with Dr. Nick Gonzalez here on Advanced Medicine Monday on the Robert Scott Bell Show. All the links up at robertscottbell.com. Your questions or comments, 866-939-BELL, 866-939-2355. Dr. Nick, always happy to have you on board. Boy, we get to talk about things that I think other shows will be fearful to tread on such issues and how we tie them in as well. And I think tying in, we talk about taxation. We didn't even get into paper money, but now I want to talk about gold, silver, and platinum, if you don't mind. And people are going to go, oh, no, they're not going to get into economics again, are they? No, no, no. This is about cancer. Cancer. You're aware, Dr. Nick, that chemotherapeutic agents include the use of gold and platinum, some very high-end type of noble metals, but not the safest thing to use in this way.
Well, gold has been used for 100 years to treat rheumatoid arthritis and actually was quite effective. But platinum-based chemotherapy agents have been used for ovarian cancer and kidney cancer, and they're used for lung cancer, a lot of different prominent high-prevalence cancers. Mm-hmm. There are two major widely used chemotherapy drugs, carboplatin and cisplatin, which cisplatin has been around for decades. And these are as far as chemo goes, I'm not a big fan of chemo. Most right. chemos don't work for most cancers. But in terms of chemotherapy agents, they're really the old workhorses and standbys because they work pretty well as far as chemo will work. The trouble is platinum, of course, is a toxic heavy metal, and it's not a good thing. And these drugs, carboplatin and cisplatin, damage the kidneys, damage the bone marrow, damage the bladder. They can cause kidney failure, and it's because of the platinum moiety in the cisplatin and the carboplatin that do that. So they're very toxic. Now, silver, of course, you're an expert on silver, but silver has been used as an antibiotic for 100 years. Now, it's interesting when we think about all the debate about mercury fillings. You know, mercury fillings are, you know, 50% silver. And one of the reasons dentists 100 years ago when they developed these mercury amalgams, actually going back to the 19th century, is silver is an antibiotic. So if you put a mercury silver filling into a decayed tooth, you know, you would try to clean it out first, but the silver would actually serve the purpose of being an antibiotic. Now, that wasn't a bad thing. The problem was the mercury that came with it that was toxic.
Yeah, very.
But silver also, as you know so well, because it's your every expertise, also not only has an antibiotic effect, but helps tissues heal. It has a very powerful healing effect on damaged tissue, like the intestinal lining or any tissue, actually. Mm-hmm. So not only is it an antimicroorganism agent, an antimicrobial, but it helps with healing.
Well, interesting, Dr. Nick, this story, and I know you don't have it in front of you, but it related these chemotherapeutic agents, including platinum, yet this story was talking about silver. And I thought, wow, this is astonishing, because one of the things that they acknowledge here is something that you and I recognize, that silver, if done properly in the right form at the right level, is pretty much benign to healthy mammalian cells. And that changes the equation, because this study is acknowledging the oncolytic, if you will, the ability to address the cancer cells, sort of like the platinum does, but without the toxicity to the healthy cells, which is a major acknowledgement and a major leap to the things we've been trying to do. First, do no harm.
Well, one of the things silver does is, as I said, it heals normal tissue. And the way it does that is it causes the DNA actually to function more efficiently. Now, in a cancer cell, what you want to try and do is get that cancer cell to be more like a normal tissue. And silver will do that through dedifferentiation processes, the use of transcription factors in the DNA.
Yes.
And it does that very effectively. And silver actually, like a lot of these very micro-trace minerals, is actually an essential mineral. Even arsenic is in very microscopic homeopathic doses.
Yes.
So silver seems to not only heal normal tissue, but actually heals cancer cells. It doesn't attack them or kill them directly necessarily, but it may cause them to become more differentiated, actually more differentiated. Cancer cells tend to be undifferentiated.
Sure.
Cause them to become more like normal tissue, which is quite remarkable. And oncologists are beginning to see that.
Oh, my gosh. That's amazing if they actually are. But, yeah, as evidence here, and as this was listed a story through the New Scientist in their health section there, talking about this. And you know, when we talk about these things, because a lot of people will go off on sidelines and then I'll say, silver is the cure for everything. And we acknowledge the benefits, the properties, but we don't ever go one thing, the only thing, right? We'll acknowledge how important is selenium. Incredibly important for all kinds of things. But at the same time, we don't say, well, only selenium. You know, we're looking at integrating into a true holistic recovery. And that's where I think what you do is so much different. What Dr. Batar we talk with is so much different. We look at everything and we integrate it all.
Yeah, too much in the alternative world is as bad as the conventional world, where they are looking for the one magic vitamin or trace mineral. You know, selenium cures cancer, intravenous vitamin C cures cancer. Well, nutrition doesn't work that way. Nutrients work as synergistic partners in terms of normalizing and making metabolism efficient. That's what they're there to do. But no nutrient in nature works by itself. Selenium works with vitamin E and vitamin C. It helps regenerate glutathione, which consists of three amino acids, glycine, glutamic acid, and cysteine. All these things work together. It's very complicated. And that's why we always give a whole host of nutrients that work synergistically. We prescribe them in great precision, with great accuracy in terms of the metabolic endpoint that we're trying to accomplish. But no nutrient works in nature by itself. And the idea of taking one nutrient like silver or selenium or vitamin C, and that's going to be the solution to any disease, is a little bit preposterous. And it's actually scientifically not an accurate way to approach nutrition. You've got to approach nutrition far differently than you approach drugs. With drugs, it's always the single miracle magic bullet that's going to cure a particular disease. Well, sometimes maybe that will happen, but it's rare. With nutrition, you've got to think of synergy and the ecology of the body and how these things all interact with each other. And they're very complicated interactions, such as with vitamin C, vitamin E, and selenium, which are closely integrated in every cell in our body. And you need to give them together in the right doses and the right forms in order for them to work efficiently together.
You mentioned the right forms, and I want to basically emphasize that point, and that there are the technologies that have been available in the 20th century that were developed to synthesize and even isolate these nutrients, and then they have had some studies come out to say these nutrients, these vitamins you're taking are dangerous, but they never differentiate in those studies, at least unless you dig deep enough. the reality that they are using synthetic derivatives, so to speak, that are not in that whole food state, and that it is a completely different received molecule or set of molecules as that which comes from food.
That's true. There have been studies on that in terms of the energetics of these molecules, and the synthetic is quite different from the naturally occurring form. And you, as much as you can, you want to go with the naturally occurring form. It's increasingly difficult to do that. It's hard to get really concentrated nutrients from food sources alone. In fact, we use some of our formulations use synthetically derived nutrients. We use as much of the whole foods forms as we can, of course, and that's always the best formulation. But for specific biochemical reactions, we'll sometimes have to resort to we never use them in this single agent, but as combinations of nutrients, that some of which may be derived from synthetic forms, which is the only way we can get them right now. Mm-hmm. So sometimes you have to do that, to be completely honest. But we try and get them to mimic as closely as possible the natural molecule.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, I acknowledge that those things can have a very measurable benefit as well with very little toxicity. So it's an advanced movement in an extraordinarily right direction. But we have so much corruption of the food supply, etc. We've got a lot of work to do to really fully recover. I mean, there's a lot of stories now, background levels of radiation rising. I mean, I covered yesterday on the show about some additional leaks in a Southern California plant. In Chicago, there was released this tritium into the groundwater, et cetera, that it's we're seeing elevated rates of childhood leukemias, et cetera. And these things, you know, don't take a day or two to develop. It's a little bit over a long period of time. So counteracting these things with nutrients to in a more comprehensive manner, as opposed to just an isolated manner, is going to be the key between, let's say, more incidences of cancer or less.
There's no question about it. Even in my lifetime, the level of pollution has worsened so much in my professional lifetime. In fact, some of my patients, in fact, I have a patient coming in tomorrow who's been with me over 20 years with stage 4 ovarian cancer, is doing beautifully and all the tumors went away. But as she's gotten older, as the world has advanced from, you know, 1992 to 1998 to 2006 to 2012, I've actually increased her supplement doses. And she, last time she was in 6 months ago, she said, "Why are you increasing doses? I'm well. The cancer's gone." I said, "Because I want you to live to be 130 years old, and the world is getting more polluted, yeah, not less polluted. The world is getting uglier, not better. Stress is getting worse, not better. Radioactivity is getting worse, not better. And you need more nutrients to maintain the optimal health you needed 10 years ago. You know, that goes back to what I think you and I have discussed before. My mentor, the eccentric but brilliant Kelly, said he would rather treat an 80-year-old than a 20-year-old. And I said, well, why? Because he said an 80-year-old grew up in a much cleaner world. They have stronger DNA. The people who were 20, even he was talking about 30 years ago when I first met him,
right,
said are made out of junk. They grew up on junk food. They were exposed to pollutants that didn't exist. You know, prior to 1946, 47, there really were no pesticides in use. There were some, but basically most food was organic. They didn't have pesticides. It's all since the post-World War II period that we've been exposed to all these chemicals.
Well, and we're rapidly losing that advantage that Dr. Kelly recognized as well, in that generations that grew up prior to the advent of these synthetics that corrupted the food supply to the degree they're corrupted today. So it is a lot harder now to deal even with the younger people than ever before, much less those we now consider middle-aged or old that grew up after World War II, particularly when they started corrupting the food supply in this way.
Fortunately, more and more people, and young people particularly, are getting interested in nutrition, are eating organically, are trying to eat whole foods. Of course, the people, young people that are living on junk food, and the average teenager gets 30% of their calories from soda pop, which defies my comprehension that, but they do. Yeah. And their main vegetable, of course, is potatoes, and it's not baked potatoes, it's potato chips and French fries. So they're not only nutritionally depleted, but they're exposed to enormous levels of toxins. I read recently there are 79,000 synthetic chemicals being released in the U.S. alone, most of which have never been tested for safety. And, of course, you get the whole load of radioactivity. What always perplexes me about nuclear power plants, I know a lot of conservatives are in favor of nuclear power, but the problem with nuclear power, which people don't realize, is scientists who talk about nuclear power talk about power plants as if they're going to last forever. Well, they don't. All things in this world, entropy, they break down. And there are natural disasters, as in Japan, which you can't predict. And there's no way to plan for those. And however strong you make a nuclear power plant, as the Japanese tried to do, mm-hmm, there's going to be a natural disaster that's going to override even the greatest of human ingenuity. But these things wear down over time, and they're going to start leaking. And that's what's happening now. We have this older generation of nuclear power plants that are starting to leak. That's a whole level of radioactivity in the ambient environment that we're all exposed to. You know, the radioactivity in Japan is in New York City now. I'm breathing it now as we talk. And that's something our bodies are not geared to. The only way to fight that off and to survive that effectively is to take supplements to counteract the damage these pollutants, this radioactivity is causing.
Well, we're definitely working on raising that level of awareness. I just want to remind everybody I'll be out at the Health Freedom Expo in Long Beach, California on March 2nd through 4th. I'll be talking about some of those strategies, have some homeopathic counterpoints as well for that. My friend Dr. Apsley will be out there talking in detail about these radiation, or let's say reversing these strategies. So something we cannot speak enough of. In fact, we're going to do some more of that, some of the things specifically that Dr. Nick Gonzalez has to recommend to all of us. We're going to hear from that as well, see what other stories are in the news here. More Advanced Medicine Monday with Dr. Nick Gonzalez on the Robert Scott Bell Show after this.
Hold that shrimp on the Barbie until you find out about Papaya 35 Multiply Plus, direct from Australia. All-natural, GMO-free Papaya 35 Multiply Plus is made from fermented papaya and pomegranate, rich in natural probiotics, digestive enzymes, and antioxidants. Now get this spectacular product to boost your natural killer cells to help your immune system and improve your digestion at the same time. So now you can have your shrimp on the Barbie, feel better, and if you act now, get a great down-under price and free shipping on each product that you order. Don't wait. Go to onestophealthshop.com and order now. That's one-stop-health-shop.com. Get that great down-under price and free shipping right now at one-stop-health-shop.com. That's one-stop-health-shop.com.
Hi, this is Robert Scott Bell, and I want to tell you about my great friends at Enterfood.com. Like me, the folks at Enterfood are fighting the good fight for your total health freedom. Their super green energy drink, Enterfood, is full of natural ingredients like spirulina and chlorella, which can improve your immune system and detox you from harmful radiation. Enterfood was voted best superfood by Mike Adams and the Southwest College of Naturopathic Medicine. Enterfood.com is one-stop shopping for all your health and survival needs. Try their meal replacement product for those watching their weight. Organic immune support coffee, cocoa, coconut milk powder, and herbal tinctures for your every need. Enterfood.com now has developed a new survival preparedness pail packed with all organic, tasty, non-GMO foods to get you and your family through any disaster. All of these great products are now available to you for a 10% discount when you mention the Robert Scott Bell Show. Call them to order at 866-762-9238. That's 866-762-9238. Or go to our product page at Enterfood.com. That's Enerfood.com.
Making sense out of medical propaganda, here's Robert.
Those of you who still believe Barack Obama that the federal government can basically take care of you, I've got some toxic fuming FEMA trailers that were delivered post-Katrina that I'd like to sell you. But that's the classic thing. Even when they send the boats are toxic and can kill you. So we've got a lot to do. We're talking self-reliance and helping each other in ways government can never do. Dr. Nick Gonzalez on for one more segment here. And Dr. Nick, again, we're recognizing a lot of the things. We don't want to elevate or escalate the fear any more than people have already, but I think they're afraid perhaps of the wrong thing. You know, if we fear a collapse of government, I think that could be a boon to freedom, a boon to helping each other out, as opposed to the fear that we don't have right now about how the government is collapsing our economy by interfering in every aspect of it and our freedom to know the truth about healing via nature.
I think that's true. I think information and knowledge only help us survive. They're not a hindrance, even if it is kind of depressing. And even with all the toxicity, there are all kinds of things people can do. You just got to get into, as your listeners are, they wouldn't be listening to the show if they weren't interested in healing, natural healing and nutrition. And just do things right. Don't eat the junk food. Try and avoid toxic chemicals in your home. This FEMA thing you mentioned is unbelievable. I guess maybe you've talked about that on your show.
Yeah, the formaldehyde leaking from these trailers for people that were homeless. I mean, okay, we'll give you a home, but we're also going to give you some cancer and other things.
Well, what's interesting is they sued because a lot of these people got really sick from the government the government sponsored trailers. But that suit was thrown out. You can't sue the government kind of thing. So they can really basically make you sick and kill you, and there's no recourse. It's too bad. And a lot of these people are going to have a hard time forgetting the fact they lived through Katrina and lost everything they had. Now they're sick because of the courtesy of the government. That's why government never does anything right. I mean, there's no mystery that trailers give off formaldehyde. There's no mystery that most new trailers are filled with all kinds of toxic chemicals because they use cheap synthetic materials. They use pesticides so the insects can't get in them. These are not clean places to be in. Trailers are among the most toxic of areas to live in. And here they are giving these new, brand new trailers as an act of, quote, government charity to these poor homeless people, and it made them sick. They'd have been better off on their own. They'd have been better off, frankly, sleeping under a tree.
Yeah, literally. And another irony here, of course, is that who was it that lobbied the government to be able to sell those trailers? In other words, they have to taxpayer funds to buy these things because they could have never dumped them onto the free market, right? Because people would go, wait a second, there's a problem here. No one would buy it. Oh, I got an idea. Let's get the government to buy it. And, of course, the people that rely upon government think they're being saved at the same time they're being destroyed.
That's right. That's absolutely correct. And that episode alone should teach us that we need to, as our founding fathers warned us, be fearful of a government as it gets stronger and be fearful of the government that, quote, wants to help you, end quote. You run the opposite direction as fast as you can.
Right. But the left are going to say, well, look, Bush was a failure, but Obama would have got those trailers in there faster. Frankly, they're both failures. That they got them in there at all is a failure.
Yeah, that's right. They shouldn't have been there in the first place. And frankly, the tradition of America in crisis over the past 200 plus years is that we helped each other. That's what our families are for and our communities are for. That's what made America such a cohesive, wonderful place. That's all falling apart. When I was growing up in the 50s, there was a strong sense of community here, even in the suburbs of Queens in New York City. We had a strong sense of community. We would take care of ourselves. That's the way we were raised. That was the American way. But that's sort of gone. Now we expect the government to do it. And, of course, the government will never do anything right. I mean, you're going to be far more concerned about your neighbor than some bureaucrat in Washington is going to be concerned about you.
Oh, sure. But this is where the lulling over the span of a number of generations now through the 20th century into where we are today, we're having to undo a lot. I mean, this Ron Paul revolution we discuss in terms of how it's playing out, it's happening very quickly in a big scheme of things. But when we're in the midst of it, sometimes it feels like we're still walking through molasses as we say, how come everybody is not supporting this man who's simply talking the sense of the founders and, you know, the Constitution, etc.? And we recognize, listen, there are a lot of people that are very toxic, whether it be from a FEMA trailer or whether it be from mercury fillings that you mentioned earlier or whether it be from the fluoride coming in through the water. We got a lot to overcome physiologically.
Yeah, we do, and the government isn't the place to do it. And, you know, Ron Paul is an interesting fellow because, as you know, he's a physician, as everybody knows, but he's one of the few people in Congress who's actually a strong supporter of alternative medicine, even though he apparently practiced in a very conventional way. He's a strong supporter of freedom of choice in healthcare,
yes,
which is absolutely critical because big government destroys freedom of choice, big government destroys creativity and innovation, and that applies specifically and most prominently to healthcare. Mm-hmm. This single payer, this universal healthcare thing would eliminate a lot of alternative medicine if they could. They were trying to do it now through government actions and government repression of supplements and government repression at the state level with medical boards. They're really trying to do that. And what we need is freedom of choice where doctors and scientists can work freely and develop new ideas and new approaches and without the restrictions or the oppression of the government.
Yeah.
Big government, as you know, of course, never leads to better outcomes in healthcare.
Hmm. Well, if we talk about better outcomes in healthcare, we've got to talk about innovation, freedom, if you will, recognizing that we have free will to make the choices here that the government's seemingly trying to prevent us from making. But if we talk about strategies, I mean, you and I have been talking about getting cleaner food, whether it be certified organic or if you're growing it yourself, you know the farmers, etc. But other strategies we can do from a supplemental perspective, you know, I believe we really should be increasing our sea vegetation if we have clean sources. And there are still some you can get, as we said, increasing, you know, the mineral dense, if you will, foods, whether it be selenium content or other things. What other strategies can you throw out there for people that are maybe just new? Believe it or not, there are new listeners all the time thinking about, well, what can I do so that I don't end up as a victim of the pharmaceutical industrial complex?
Yeah, well, in terms of food, try and get it locally if you can. You know, even New York City, there are farmers markets. You get to know the producers. You get to know the farmers. You trust them. The word organic really doesn't mean much now because it's been co-opted by the Department of Agriculture and by big industry. So you can have organic vegetables that come from an industry farm where they're using sludge as a fertilizer. You want to get to know your local farmer. Organic food, this has been proven since the time of Sir Albert Howard. 80, 90 years ago, organic food grown properly, biodynamically, is cleaner and more nutritious. Pesticides are neurotoxins. That's how they kill insects. You don't want those, you don't want neurotoxins in your body. They've done studies now that show children raised on organic, clean food are healthier, do better in school than kids raised with the pesticides. What a surprise. Pesticides are neurotoxins. That's how they work.
Yeah.
And they accumulate over time in our fat cells. So the fact that it may not be a lot in a single serving of broccoli doesn't matter. When you eat broccoli every day for a year, you're getting a lot of pesticides. Cleaner the food, the better. Try and get to know your source. In terms of animal products, you know, we have all kinds of diets that range from plant-based to red meat three times a day. Everybody should have some fat. Everybody should have some animal fat. Grass-fed is always better, even better than organic. You know, beef cattle were meant to eat grass.
That's right.
What they're supposed to eat. Grass-fed beef is always going to be the healthiest and have the best fatty acid profile of the omega-3s, the omega-6s. You know, organic eggs, these are simple things people can do. Avoid the whites, white flour, white sugar, white junk, anything that's white.
By the way, Dr. Nick, it was interesting in an interview recently with Ron Paul, he was asked about his diet. I think it was on Piers Morgan the other night on CNN, and he said exactly what you just said. I avoid the whites, the refined sugars, the refined flour. So he's become aware over the years, and as I've interviewed him over the years, he's always been supportive of even homeopathy and, of course, all these natural medicines and our freedom to refuse to vaccinate. God bless him for that. So I'm glad you brought that up, and I just acknowledge that, yes, he's not unaware completely, although it's got to be hard for him on the campaign trail like he's been on.
Yeah, although increasingly it's easier to get cleaner food. You know, even mainstream New York City restaurants are now boasting that they have mostly organic, locally grown foods. You know, we got to credit people like Alice Waters from San Francisco and Berkeley, who had the first locally grown kind of restaurant. And she started that whole locavore movement, which is important. You got to get to know your food. And restaurants increasingly providing clean food. So even on the campaign trail, it probably is possible to get clean food. Although I know he's got to be shown in the front of the media shaking hands with the local coffee shop owner. And I realize he has to do that. But you really have to credit him, because here's a guy who was a conventional physician who's really open-minded to alternatives. And in his own life, apparently, he started to change his own dietary habits.
Yes.
So that's very commendable.
And all
but
the
he
younger,
certainly has an open mind to other people's ideas of what healthcare
yes.
should be.
All the younger candidates, interestingly enough, when they're asked about him, say, this guy's got more energy than all of us. So here he is at 76 and it's living proof that staying active, even if you don't have the most perfect diet, that exercise plays a huge role in our ability to adapt and contend with what we're dealing with.
Yeah, there was a recent study that found, and this is from the conventional medical world, oddly enough, that cancer patients receiving chemo who exercise regularly, fairly vigorously, do better than the ones who don't exercise. Now, traditionally, oncologists would discourage their cancer patients from exercising because they felt sorry for them and they're so weak and they're debilitating, the chemo's debilitating. It's the exact opposite. Cancer patients that exercise vigorously. Now, you don't have to go crazy, you know, particularly if you're really sick and have pain, you can't do vigorous exercise. But at least everybody can walk. Walking, of course, as you know, is one of the best exercises, you know, 20 to 30 minutes of walking a day. Mm-hmm. We advise all our cancer patients, even the sick ones, and we see a lot of really sick cancer patients, to walk every day, at least 20 to 30 minutes. Stimulates blood circulation, but also lymphatic drainage. Very important. Helps the body detoxify, increases
Absolutely.
Circulation, gets nutrients to the cells. Trying to heal somebody, you want nutrients getting to the cells. Yes, rest is important too. The body heals best at rest, but you also have to be active to a certain degree. And as patients get better, we always encourage them to get more and more physically active. So even conventional studies are now showing that exercise benefits advanced cancer patients receiving standard treatments. Kind of an interesting approach.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And I love the fact that we can chat about this. It's sort of like an exercise in our mental bodies and sometimes even our spiritual bodies when we get together and talk about all these things. I'm always invigorated and excited when we can connect, and we did it again. My goodness, we traveled from biblical stuff to physiological, emotional. Oh man, it's great. Listen, I gotta do some more advanced medicine. Dr. Batar is going to join us next. And by the way, I want to remind everybody the vaccine seminar. It's Vaccines Armed and Dangerous. All the information they don't want you to hear. John Rappaport and I recorded this. It is available now. I have the links up through the blog at robertscottbell.com. Take you right to Webseed. And Dr. Nick, always a blast to have you on board. You know you got an open door here.
Well, I appreciate it. Again, thanks for having me on. It's always great to talk about these kind of things.
All right, we're going to take a quick breather here, but in the meantime, remember this, that the power to heal is yours.
The Robert Scott Bell Show.
The Robert Scott Bell Show.
Hi, this is Joshua.
And Anna Scurry, co-founders of Alive Foundation, and you're listening to The Robert Scott Bell Show. Alive is a nonprofit organization that will be holding its first annual Celebrity Health and Eco Benefit in New York City and live streamed globally.
Why should you support? This benefit will be standing behind the world's leading natural doctors, celebrities, and organizations that are making a real difference in our world.
Visit AliveNewYork.org today for more information or to make a donation. We cannot do this without you. Join the cause today and be the change.
Listening to the Robert Scott Bell Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
The Robert Scott Bell Show.
Robert Scott Bell Show.
Today, health insurance reform is the law of the land.
The health care law was supposed to keep medical costs down, but a new report says your payments are expected to jump.
I think I made a mistake.
Robert Scott Bell.
A coalition of public health advocates targeting Ronald McDonald.
I'd love to see Ron McDonald retired. Let's kill him off like we did Joe Camel.
Oh, look at that!
Robert Scott Bell.
Side effects may include depressed mood, thoughts of suicide,
insomnia,
suicide may occur,
diarrhea,
unusual or strange dreams, agitation,
sexual side effects,
drowsiness, dizziness,
and nausea,
hostility, trouble sleeping,
seizures,
various skin reactions,
thoughts of suicide,
risk of suicide may occur.
Oh yeah, drugs. You gotta have drugs.
Taking on bureaucrats and corporations that would stand in the way of health freedom and making sense out of medical propaganda. The voice of health, freedom, and liberty, Robert Scott Bell.
As we crank up the second hour of the Robert Scott Bell Show today, it is time for officially now Advanced Medicine Monday, the Medical Rewind with Dr. Rachid Bitar. Hey, Dr. Bitar, I think we solved the mystery of Leroy, New York. You heard about this?
Yeah, with the Facebook or something.
Yeah, it's the social networks. That's the cause of it now. We've got these bizarre things happening in the news, but this headline is as weird as any. Is social media spreading the twitching hysteria? Okay, is it spreading the twitching, or is it the hysteria, or is it the psychogenic illness, or is it, oh, wait, one of the kids doesn't have a uterus, so it can't be? And now we're learning there's an adult, an older woman in her 30s. I say older. She's younger than us. But also now coming down with this twitching, does this story get weirder all the time?
You know, it's kind of interesting to look at how they're weaving this tale, because nobody wants to talk about stuff that's being injected into the body and things that are known toxins causing problems. But of course, social media that probably has over, 250, 300 million people participating now worldwide, and you have all of a sudden these strange symptoms occurring in one small area of one small state, relatively right. Speaking, from the amount of space that New York covers or that this town covers compared to the entire world with the social media. So instead of looking at what could really be causing this, like what is unique with this particular area, what are the exposures to from environmental toxins in this area,
Yeah. They're
just going to blanket it by saying that it's social media. And it just so happens to affect all the people in this one particular town, but nobody else in the world.
It makes perfect sense. Hey, let's give a listen. This is the story as it was covered on the news the other day on TV. I think it was Headline News TV. But Marge Fitzsimmons evidently is this 36-year-old Leroy woman, and here's some of the news story we heard.
Dr. Drew, this new woman who's come forward, an adult as opposed to these teenage students, really adds a new wrinkle to this mystery of what might possibly connect all of the people who are suffering these symptoms. Take a look.
My parents lived...
For the first time, an adult is coming forward and showing the same symptoms as a group of students in upstate New York. 36-year-old Marge Fitzsimmons says her physical and verbal tics began last October, around the same time as the teens.
You know, that's interesting. I'm going to pause that now. Dr. Bitar, what is it in October? I mean, isn't that about the time they start ramping up the flu shot propaganda? I mean, is there anybody asking the question, did all of these teens get a flu shot or other things? I haven't seen anything correlating that issue.
Well, we have about 22 questions.
Yeah.
That I have, I think I even talked to you this about this off the air, but there are about 22 questions that if I had the answers to by each of these people that are complaining, we could pretty much, to within a 3% plus or minus margin of error, come to a reasonable conclusion as to what the etiology of this is. In fact, one of my staff members has already been given the task to reach out to any of the parents of these adolescents and ask if they would communicate among the parents so that we can at least get the answers to these questions. I mean, I'm not even asking them to come get to treatment or anything. Just answer these questions so we can figure out, so we can at least know what's going on. I mean, the part that is the most absurd for me, at least, Robert, is when you told me, and I didn't hear this myself, but when you told me that one of the governmental officials, whether it's a public health officer or somebody to do with the government, had said that they know what this is, but they can't tell anybody. At first, apparently, they told the parents they could tell, that you've already been told, but the parents said, you haven't told us anything. But we know what this is, but we can't tell you. I mean, that is about as suspect as you can get.
And the parents up there are getting very angry and upset. And rightfully so. I mean, if you're not being told the truth, or if you're telling one group in the media this and the parents have no idea what's going on, and in this case now you had a 36-year-old woman, it becomes more obvious that there's some kind of toxicological impact. I mean, to try and pass this off as mass Facebook hysteria is just, I don't know how they're even trying to get away with that.
Yeah, it's just very preposterous, and the more they try to cover it up, the more preposterous it becomes.
It really is amazing. So you say you have these 22 questions. Are these questions that are published anywhere that people can read, and maybe somebody can of our audience could get up there to Leroy, maybe get to the bottom of this? I mean, it seems like any toxicologist from the CDC, because we've talked about that there are good people in there, if they're allowed to do their job in toxicology specifically, they probably could get to the bottom of this as well.
Well, toxicologists, unfortunately, from the conventional standpoint, the toxicologists are really pharmaceutical toxicologists. So they're looking at the toxicology induced by a pharmacological substance,
right,
not by environmental toxins or other types of toxins. So I've already had this argument because a person that was one of my most aggressive opposers during the Desiree Jennings component was, if you remember, a toxicologist from Yale University.
Yes.
Who kept saying that, there's no toxicological burden here, and it's absurd to say that there's anything toxicological going on, even though in less than 72 hours we had this woman stabilized from going between 15 and 45 second periods of anoxia and incapable of speaking or walking, and we had her able to speak, no more seizures, or only having 3 or 4 seizures a day as opposed to having 60 seizures a day. These are the types of things the toxicologists in the conventional realm are looking at, only the toxicology related to the pharmacological substances being used. They don't look at toxicology like you and I would look at toxicology.
Well, I think it's an important distinction. I want to make sure I've got this right, Dr. Bitar. When you have a traditional toxicologist, they might look at environmental sources. It might even acknowledge heavy metals or other things like that, other poisons, but may completely overlook something like a vaccine because it's not in their sphere of consideration that should be considered a toxicological question.
Well, the toxicologists I've talked to, they don't even consider heavy metals as toxicity issues.
That far, huh? Wow.
Yeah. It's just, if it's not a drug, then they say that it's not toxic. Drugs are what's toxic. And so they look at the toxicological effects from drugs. Hmm. And, every now and then you'll hear somebody that does acknowledge it. But, I mean, even lead toxicity that's widely talked about in the medical literature, they don't even talk about the lead toxicity. And if they do talk about lead toxicity, it's almost like written off to be a minor issue. It's not a issue that they certainly don't look at mercury toxicity. There is no such thing as mercury toxicity, because just imagine if the toxicological realm in conventional medicine were to recognize mercury as a toxicological substance, one, and two, that there is such a thing as mercury toxicity, then pretty much the entire world's population, with not only vaccines, but the amalgam burden and all these other things. In fact, even the Centers for Disease Control, their NHANES data shows clearly that 1 out of 6 women of childbearing age in the United States is considered mercury toxic between the age of like 18 and 42 or something like that. But the point is that if they did acknowledge that, then all of a sudden the toxicological component of conventional medicine would upset the entire playing field for the traditional model of medicine, bringing everybody to our way of thinking. And of course, they can't afford to do that. So that it's almost like saying, yeah, you can go into toxicology, but you don't talk about metals. You don't talk about persistent organic pollutants.
Wow.
You only talk about pharmacological toxicity.
And, you know, interestingly enough, too, we're glad that they at least acknowledge something's toxic, but they're missing a whole other realm out there. For example, in this story about this woman, this Miss Fitzsimmons, 36 years old, now having these strange tics or Tourette's-like symptoms, she acknowledged that earlier in her life when she was a child, she hung around in a quarry. I guess, you know, kids would do that. I've done that as a kid. But it was evidently near this so-called chemical spill site. But then people will say, well, how come she didn't show symptoms right then and there? I mean, there's another aspect of time and toxicity and accumulation that also these people are not considering at all.
Absolutely. Accumulation is a huge component because if you take your hand and run it through an open flame, you don't burn yourself. But you put your hand in that flame for more than, you know, 10, 15, 20 seconds, it's going to get hot and you're going to burn yourself. So accumulation is a very significant component. And then how long are you exposed? That's that, it's that portion, the length of exposure is not linearly, but exponentially more toxic when you're dealing with the toxicological substance as opposed to you know, you would think that, okay, if I'm exposed to this for 10 minutes, I'm going to have, you know, 10% damage. And if I'm exposed to it for 20 minutes, then I'm going to have 20% damage or whatever the units are. But it's actually not like that. It would be more like if I'm exposed to it for 10 minutes, I have 10% damage. But if I'm exposed to it for 20 minutes, I'm going to have not 20%, but more like 25% damage.
Sure, or more. Or also, as you've written about so extensively, too, the different abilities to methylate, to detoxify in the different bodies. Whereas, you know, two people can be injected with the same vaccine, same lot, and one person goes into seizures and another appears, if you will, to be fine because of their abilities to deal with the toxic onslaught.
Exactly. And that's based upon genetic predisposition, the body's ability to be able to process some of those substances, whether they be chemicals or metals or whatever they may be. And so that is indeed a very significant component of how well the body can actually eliminate some of these substances. That's a big component.
Well, and I think that what's interesting, if we were to deduce, as we have been speculating on the Leroy incident since we found it happening, if you have this group or a number of kids that are having now an adult, I mean, it seems to me that there is some kind of chronic exposure there that some people are now reaching that tolerance point or that over-the-edge point to express something that is aberrant in this way.
Absolutely. A bucket can only hold so much water. Once you exceed that amount of water, the capacity of that bucket to hold it, there is no other choice but for that water to spill over. And that's exactly what we're seeing. And Robert, you brought up, you know, what are these questions? These aren't anything extraordinarily unique. I mean, the questions would start off with basically, what medications are you on? And everyone would answer that question. You know, when was the last time that you received any type of inoculation? They would all answer that question. When was the last time that you received a flu shot? You know, has there been any other type of medical therapeutic that you've been exposed to? Do any of you have hobbies like painting? Do you, any of you work in a lab or chemistry class? Were they all in the same chemistry class perhaps? You know, this is a basic questions. And you don't have to be a doctor to do this. I mean, you could be anybody. It's a common sense type of thing. You go back into the last 6 months of these people's lives and you try to ask questions and see if there's a commonality between any of those people, a common denominator. And if you start seeing certain things that start being highlighted as common denominators, then you have now a postulate as to what are the possibilities that this particular A, B, C, D exposure could have caused this. And it's a process of elimination. And I am certain that it would not take more than probably 10 minutes of questions off each of these individuals, Robert, and you could have the answer.
Well, that's what we want to do here, get right to the heart of the matter and help those most in need. That's why we do this every week, the Robert Scott Bell Show with Dr. Bitar. We call it Advanced Medicine Monday, the Medical Rewind. The 9 steps to keep the doctor away, extraordinarily selling across the globe, international bestseller now. You're going on tour into Australia. I heard now that we've confirmed the one event that I have been able to link to is the one that we know is open to the public. The others might be invitation only. So I wanted to confirm everybody there if you can make it. I think that was the Adelaide one, if I'm not mistaken.
And right, that's at a University of Adelaide. The other two I'm not sure what the criteria is. I know some of them, it's a private group of physicians, and then the other group is CEOs of certain businesses, apparently. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, good. Well, regardless, there's an opportunity for our friends in Australia, and we're getting more and more of them every week. So I'm glad to hear, and we'll be talking with you when you're down there. So everybody knows we're going to hear from Dr. Bitar next week when he's in Australia. So this is exciting. So we're going to take a break now. We got some more information to cover. Obviously, there's always news stories. In fact, there's a question that I received during the week that is really directed to Dr. Bitar about the use of EDTA. We're talking chelation. So I know Dr. Bitar will be anxious to set the record straight on that as well. And if you have any questions or comments during the week, 866-939-BELL, 866-939-2355. Say thanks to our sponsors. Coming right back. Hysteria when you're near.
The Robert Scott Bell Show.
Hello, this is Jonathan Wagner. We have an internet website, www.choosetobehealthy.com, that carries many of the products discussed on Robert's show, including 100% whole food chromium and selenium, silica, as well as sovereign silver and Nordic naturals. Choosetobehealthy.com features the Rolls Royce of probiotics. It's Dr. O'Hara's probiotics. Dr. O'Hara, a world-renowned microbiologist, formulated a unique probiotic that blends ancient Japanese fermentation methods with 21st century technology. No refrigeration is needed. Dr. O'Hara's probiotics contains the strongest lactic acid bacteria known to man based on scientific laboratory research. 6.25 times stronger. Quite simply, it works and works very well. So go to our website, www.choosetobehealthy.com, or call us toll-free, 866-424-1077. That's 866-424-1077. We're here to help.
Since the 1920s, people around the world have been using radio frequencies to safeguard the health of themselves and their families. Through this tested technology, pioneered by Royal Raymond Rife, researchers have found that specific radio frequencies can eliminate viruses, bacteria, molds, and parasites without harming normal healthy cells. Frequency technology could help millions now suffering from various infections, even arthritis, herpes, Lyme disease, and other painful chronic conditions. The BCX Ultra Frequency Instrument has been developed over a period of 30 years. The BCX Ultra is one of the most powerful healing tools ever. Turn ill health around. Enjoy life again. Start learning about the BCX Ultra today. Visit bioelectricsforhealth.com or call 1-800-936-6240. That's 1-800-936-6240. Call today and start the healing.
The information is so good, it requires no expiration date. The Robert Scott Bell Show.
All right, we're back, and Dr. Bitar, one of the things you've been doing over the years, of course, in promoting the let's say aggressive detoxification in cases of acute overwhelming toxicity due to vaccines and other things, is the concept of chelation. And we have, you and I have covered this on the air a number of times, but we have a question specifically, and I don't know if it references oral or intravenous, but I figure we can take it and discuss it either way. But if you don't mind, we can read this listener comment question.
Sure.
Okay. She says, I have read about EDTA and its use for heavy metal detox by chelation. I've also heard that EDTA can improve circulation by removing calcium and cholesterol deposits by chelation in the arteries and veins. Would you recommend this for a type 2 diabetic? I've recently purchased some EDTA and the minerals recommended for replacement after taking it. I haven't started the regimen yet. The suggested regimen says to take EDTA for 5 days, stop for 9, take minerals, and repeat 2 more times, then remain off for at least 90 days. Is this your recommendation? I don't mean to be so complicated. That's the question there. Maybe we can nutshell it and help people understand how they can interact with it appropriately.
Sure. Well, obviously, from the question, it indicates if she was able to purchase it, and she's got this 5 day on, 9 day regimen off. It's an oral
sounds like it,
chelation,
yeah.
And oral chelation point blanketly just simply doesn't work. EDTA is less than 5% absorbed through the gastrointestinal tract, and the benefits that have been associated with circulation are when they're intravenously administered. When you take something orally, it's going to be ingested, and it goes through the alimentary tract, it goes through the gastrointestinal tract, and you just don't have the same absorption. But the studies have shown that EDTA is absorbed less than 5% through the gastrointestinal mucosa. Mm-hmm. So from the first benefit, if you're thinking to take EDTA and get a benefit from a vascular standpoint or from any standpoint, it's going to be minimal, if any. EDTA is highly effective, but if somebody's in good health and they don't have any kind of medical problem and they want to just take some EDTA on a routine basis to prevent accumulation, perhaps it may have some benefit there, but certainly not for somebody who's got type 2 diabetes. It will help somebody with type 2 diabetes if you take it intravenously or transdermally, mm-hmm. Possibly even rectally. There's some products out there that are rectally used. Now, there are some opposing studies that have been shown that when you put an EDTA suppository within the rectal mucosa at that particular area where the suppository sets, there's a greater depletion of minerals that causes a leukoplastic or dysplastic change, which is, for those that don't know what those words mean, that's basically a precancerous type change. So you may not want to use the rectal suppositories. I personally don't recommend using them, and the couple of patients that have used them in my practice did not like doing it. They felt uncomfortable. And so transdermal or intravenous EDTA will give you a benefit. And EDTA for vascular improvement, most definitely intravenous is by far more beneficial than any other version.
Right. But, and the type 2 diabetes connection, of course, anybody that has type 2 has a serious mineral depletion. And we particularly know of the chromium, the glucose tolerance factor chromium molecule that is gone. And that, of course, could lead to, a down leveling of HDL. I've seen people go on a glucose tolerance factor chromium, a food grown form of it, and elevate their HDL extraordinarily. So these ratios shift for these people, and the doctors are very happy.
Minerals are a totally different topic, Robert. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the one significant thing that every human being on this planet can do is increase their mineral load. I mean, by taking more minerals, you're going to negate many problems. I mean, somebody has a back spasm, I tell them take minerals. Mm-hmm. Somebody that doesn't feel so well, take minerals. To me, mineral deficiency is very endemic throughout the world, throughout our international society. Mm-hmm. So everybody needs minerals. In diabetics, as you said, chromium is a big issue. Manganese is a big issue. Usually copper, zinc ratio imbalance. And then, of course, selenium is one of the other things that these people are usually deficient in. But, when we're talking about specifically with the chelation aspect, if somebody's recommending that you take oral chelation, and I don't want to be pessimistic here, but essentially they're just trying to sell you a product. If you want to get a benefit, truly benefit from chelation, oral chelation is not the route to go. There are so many products out there that are oral chelators. They're trying to piggyback on the benefits that people have experienced and reported from IV chelation. But chelation, by definition, the word chelation means, it comes from the Greek word chel, which is like the pinching action of a crab's claw. Mm-hmm. And basically, whatever goes into the system must come out inert. And when you ingest something like EDTA, there's an absorption aspect, which again is only 5%. But whether or not it gets picked up and utilized in the body a different way, the EDTA orally just simply will not do even a fraction of the job that IV EDTA would. And to find a doctor that knows what they're doing with EDTA or with any of the chelators for that matter, it's not too difficult. I mean, there's a few thousand doctors actually in the U.S. that do it. But I would recommend that you go to somebody who's had some formal training in it, and that's either board eligible or board certified. And you can go to abcmt.org, and ABCMT stands for American Board of Clinical Metal Toxicology, abcmt.org, and you'll find somebody who has showed some level of proficiency, whether they're board eligible or board certified. You will find somebody that can help you.
Good. I've got that linked up in the blog, too, for today's notes based on that. So I appreciate the question. That's Mel. And she also said she heard me talking about at one point the use of silver hydrosol specifically, and silicon for neurological health. Of course, we also talk about omega-3 fats for the nervous system as well. But in terms of diabetic neuropathy, I've seen high-dose administrations of silver with increasing omega-3 fats and silica, the mineral silica, reversing, for instance, neuropathies or strange or abnormal neurological pathway, communication in the body.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's so many components when you're looking at the silver aspect and other types of minerals. To me, actually, I think that silver is probably the most significant natural antiviral, antibacterial agent out there.
Well,
in fact, silverdine, which is a pharmaceutical developed burn solution, it was actually developed at the Institute of Surgical Research at Brooke Army Medical Center at Fort Sam Houston, which is where I did my general surgery residency at. But silverdine, the major ingredient of silverdine is silver. One of the most natural things you can do is take silver, any kind of silver product. There's silver hydrosols, and there's colloidal silvers, and you know, there's virtually an unlimited number of types of silver out there. And some people would say, you know, this one's better, that one's better, and they're right. Certain versions are better than other versions, but I would recommend that if you've got a problem, like you've got a cut on your hand or you've got an infection going on or something like that, you know, one of the simplest things to do is to get some type of silver solution, whether it's there's a number of different types out there, but silver hydrosol is a very popular one, or colloidal silver or ionic silver or whatever it is, and use it before you start going to the other forms of like antibiotics or
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Then you relegate the drug-type synthetic medicines to the last resort where it's more appropriate, because you find that in many ways you eliminate the need for ever, you know, taking that leap.
Exactly. You'll find that most of the time you will not need to go on to that other stuff, and the silver will end up working very well on its own.
Yeah, and of course, we're all about the law of economy, getting the most out of every drop, the most out of every mile. That's why we will acknowledge the different forms of silver out there, and it's not that even the worst one won't have some benefit, but we always try to find the most efficient means with the least amount of accumulation of anything that we're dealing with. That's why we've utilized the hydrosol here. Now, here's Mel's final question. You ready for this? Will either of these or other therapies you recommend help with manly problems? I wonder what he means by that. Maybe erectile dysfunction and low T, of course.
Well, absolutely. When you improve the vascular supply, when you improve circulation, you will, without a doubt, improve erectile function. And that's assuming that there is a compromise of the vascular supply in the first place, which in vast majority cases is the case, especially with type 2 diabetes and people with the vascular insufficiency. And I've had numerous cases. I mean, numerous cases. One of my very, very first patients that I ever treated with chelation, this was back in 1995. So we're looking, 17 years ago.
Now, yeah.
My gosh, that seems like that long ago, but it's 17 years ago.
Shake my head.
Yeah, it was one of my first patients ever that I treated, and I just started doing chelation on myself, and I had done, I think there was maybe half a dozen patients that I had started, and this gentleman was in his late 70s, and he sought me out. He specifically came because he wanted chelation, and we started his treatment, and the first thing he reported was probably a month and a half, 2 months into the treatment. He started telling me his eyesight was getting better, but you know, he was an older gentleman. I just figured he was just, you know, I just kind of pat him on the shoulder and say, "That's great, sir. Thank you for telling me that." And I just pretty much ignore him because I thought, you know, whatever. I mean, sometimes you think people get a little bit, they start embellishing a little bit of the improvement. Yes. They feel better and they start embellishing. So then he, I mean, this goes on for like maybe 3 or 4 weeks. So about this fourth month of the treatment, I get a letter from his ophthalmologist, and he says, "I don't know what you're doing, but this man's eyesight has improved over 75%.
Nice.
And then he had macular degeneration.
Mm-hmm.
And macular degeneration, as you know, is one of the leading causes of blindness. And I started doing some research on the internet at that time, which was, you know, relatively new at the time, and did some more research in the library and found that macular degeneration was one of the issues that chelation had been shown to improve. And in fact, macular degeneration is an issue with vascular. It's a vascular compromise issue. The next thing that this man reported was that his wife, mm-hmm. Well, he was sleeping in bed, and his wife woke him up and said, "Stop poking me." They were both facing in one direction, you know, kind of like spooning, and the wife was facing away from the husband. The husband was facing towards her back, and she says, "Stop poking me." And he says, "I'm not poking you." And she says, "Yes, you are. Stop poking me." And he goes, "I'm not poking you."
Oh, no.
And she turns around and looks, and he looks down, and he's got an erection.
Is this a Valentine's Day story or what?
Yeah, exactly. It was like the first time he had an erection in like 15 years.
Oh, my goodness. Well, that's a week early for Valentine's Day, but we'll take it. I mean, that's a happy story, I think.
Yeah, it is.
Or the wife was a little annoyed at that point. All right,
at
honey.
At that point, yeah. I guess it was in the middle of the night. So
yeah, yeah. Come on. We make an appointment for this. You know how it is after you're married long enough. So, listen, that's great. I mean, these are the kind of questions, very serious. I have, you know, people that will come up to me when they find out what I do in homeopathy and natural thing. Hey, do you have anything like natural Viagra? I mean, that's such a common question. And I say, look at your lifestyle. Look at what you're eating. Look at the drugs you're on. You're on statin drugs, for goodness sake. What do you expect is going to happen?
Well, that's true, and that's exactly the point, that it's a combination of many different things that will lead a person into the wrong type of lifestyle, which will, you know, it's almost like the domino effect. You don't do the right things, and then you end up having more and more problems, and it's like planting a seed. I don't know whether that would be an analogy that would be well received. But if you think about the seed, you plant the seed, but the seed's not going to do anything unless you provide it with nourishment and sunlight and water and the right atmosphere for it to grow. And so your health is the same type of thing. You invest in your health, you do the right things. And if you do the right things, you're not only going to start seeing improvements like with erectile dysfunction, but you're going to see improvements with flexibility and joints and how you feel and your mood and, you know, just on and on and on. It's just a remarkable thing. And I think that, I hate to sound like this is a plug for my book, but really that's why the book's been so well received, and that's why it went on to become an international bestseller, is because they're simple steps. But when people started doing it, Robert, they were able to actually observe the changes that I talked about in the book, and even more so. Mm-hmm. In fact, 75% to 80% of all complaints that people have, and this was something we actually monitored around 1998 to around 2001. We monitored this for about 2.5 years. 75 to 80% of all complaints that patients had when they came to a clinic, by just implementing these steps without any intervention that we did, people improved.
Yes. Well, and if you weren't going to mention your book, I was going to, because the last part of that question is about low T, and you've written extensively on the issue of endocrine imbalances and dysfunctions and certainly diminished, let's say, levels as not only as we age, but as we become more toxic and deficient, which is critical. And we'll talk about that on the other side of this break, as well as we have a phone call question. Those of you calling in through the toll-free 866-939-BELL, 866-939-2355. Super Don tells me this relates to vaccines. Oh, we never like to talk about vaccines, Dr. Bittar.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, we're going to take this call for sure. You betcha. All right, we'll be right back with more Powerful Healing. Check out all the links, including those to Medical Rewind and the 9 steps to keep the doctor away right now up there at robertscottbell.com. We'll be right back.
Pharmacological research from universities all over the world have proven that papaya supplements have tremendous health benefits. At the One Stop Health Shop, that's one-stop-health-shop.com, you'll find our international bestseller, Papaya Leaf Extract. Its natural probiotic formula supports your white blood cells, reduces oxidative stress, and strengthens your immune system. Papaya is one of the richest sources of antioxidants in the world and up to 20 times more powerful than vitamin E. One Stop Health Shop carries a large fermented papaya product selection. Our supplements are all natural, certified organic, GMO-free, and made right here in Australia. But they are shipped to you anywhere in the world free of charge. Take advantage of our limited time down under prices and order now. Don't wait. Visit the One Stop Health Shop. That's one-stop-health-shop.com for all your nutraceutical needs and get free shipping on all products ordered. one-stop-health-shop.com.
Hey there, this is Mike. Got a couple of things you may want to check out. Did you know about the website counterthink.com? These are some really hilarious, freedom-oriented, health-oriented, even political cartoons that you got to check out. counterthink.com. And if you want to know what's in your food, go check out foodinvestigations.com, where you've got a bunch of free mini documentaries, little videos there that you can watch that will show you what's in your food and what's not in your food. We talk about Total Blueberry Pomegranate Cereal made by General Mills. Did you know it has no blueberries in it and no pomegranates? We got the video right there on foodinvestigations.com. And if you really want to know what's in your food, your medicine, your personal care products, and so on, head over to naturalnews.com. We're publishing about 12 articles a day now, everything from healing superfoods to the dangerous chemicals in your products, foods, and medicines. Naturalnews.com. Check it out.
Hi, this is Joshua.
And Anna Scurry, co-founders of Alive Foundation, and you're listening to The Robert Scott Bell Show. Alive is a nonprofit organization that will be holding its first annual Celebrity Health and Eco-Benefit in New York City and live-streamed globally.
Why should you support? This benefit will be standing behind the world's leading natural doctors, celebrities, and organizations that are making a real difference in our world.
Visit AliveNewYork.org today for more information or to make a donation. We cannot do this without you. Join the cause today and be the change.
With natural and man-made disasters and economic turmoil, if we don't get well prepared, we will most certainly regret it. Good readiness must include storage of high-quality food that will build us up rather than tear us down. Much of the storable food available is full of bad fats, salt, sugar, nutrient-poor refined foods, and even MSG. In response, EnerHealth Botanicals has created our 40-day and 40-night 100% organic preparedness pail. It's GMO-free and has a 10 to 20-year shelf life if stored at 60 degrees or less. Some of the items need cooking, some can be eaten dry, while some can be soaked and sprouted. These are selling out fast at third the price of storable food packages. Call us at 866-762-9238. That's 866-762-9238. Or go to enerfood.com, enerfood.com. 866-762-9238. Or go to enerfood.com.
Making sense out of medical propaganda. Here's Robert.
Dr. Bitar, just to follow up on that last question, also related to the erectile dysfunction, but more than that, and this is men and women combined, but particularly men with the low T or low testosterone. If you have anything to add to that, of course, we can direct them to the book as well.
Well, Robert, I'll just say this portion about it, and then you know how I feel about giving any kind of hormone. Whenever you give a hormone, any kind of hormone, in testosterone or whether it be, you know, estrogen in a female or whatever type of hormone you give an individual, the thing that you have to be very, very concerned about, and you have to look at this from a very judicial standpoint, when you give an end hormone, remember that that end hormones, there's a monitoring system in the body that's actually regulating the release of these hormones within our own body. And these regulators, think of them as thermostats. They're measuring what the temperature is. So the hypothalamus, which is the master gland, is monitoring all the different levels of hormones. When you give the body testosterone, for example, think of a bodybuilder who takes too much testosterone. What happens to that bodybuilder? Well, the testosterone levels that are being introduced into the body sees all this extra testosterone coming in, so the body says, uh-oh, too much testosterone, and tells its own endocrine glands to stop producing testosterone because there's too much testosterone coming into the body. And so over time, when the person keeps on using more and more of this testosterone, the body keeps on telling its own organs to suppress it, trying to balance, because the body's goal is trying to desperately balance the system. Yes. Then when you finally stop using that testosterone, those glands, those the testicles, for instance, because they have not been utilized in so long, it's the old adage, if you don't use it, you're going to lose it. And basically that's what happens. The testicles have gone so long without producing any of its own testosterone, they can't produce testosterone. That's one reason bodybuilders have shriveled up testicles, because their systems can't produce anything anymore, because those particular muscles, just like they're moving their muscles and building their you know, musculoskeletal muscles, the rest of the body, that the endocrine system, those muscles aren't being worked. Of course, there's no muscles in the endocrine system, but I'm speaking figuratively.
Sure.
You're not utilizing those organs, you're not utilizing those endocrine glands, and so because of the lack of use, they become atrophied and they no longer produce. So never, ever, no matter what anybody says, I don't care what reason they give you, don't ever take an end hormone. All this crap about biologically identical hormones, still, it doesn't matter. They're taking a synthetic hormone, they're giving you now one that's a natural hormone, thinking that it's any better. But the problem is you're violating the negative inhibitory feedback loop that God designed in our systems to regulate our own systems. And this, I go into a lot of detail in Chapter 11 of the book on this particular component. But
well, I mean, it's very well said the way you put it there, of course. If any of the men out there think that being a big bodybuilder with the help of these hormones, and if you don't mind an atrophied testes. In fact, I covered a story last week which was kind of funny and painful at the same time. They were talking about the new way to do birth control for men was that they were zapping the testes of men with some kind of frequency, ultrasound, electrical current. And it was a painful thing to have to talk about. But it seems that you can do this as well by increasing your inflow of these synthetic hormones as well.
Absolutely. In fact, the very popular treatment for prostate cancer, Lupron, I mean, Lupron's entire mechanism of action is by inducing this negative inhibitory feedback loop and thus suppressing the normal endocrine function by giving so much of the of one hormone in the one end that it basically shuts down the body's own production. That's the entire mechanism of action of Lupron. So, you know, we have to make sure that we understand why people are recommending these type of substances. And, you know, people tell me all the time, yeah, but my testosterone level, the doctor measured it and it was low.
Right.
Well, the question is, why is it low?
Thank you. Why?
And it's like, you know, it's by giving your body more testosterone, that's not the answer. You weren't born with less testosterone. You weren't all of a sudden, somebody didn't come in the middle of the night and, you know, took your tooth that you had underneath your bed at the tooth fairy you were waiting for to come by and say, oh, by the way, I'll just take the testosterone with that. Yeah. It doesn't work that way. It's very simple. There's a reason why that gland has shut down or is not producing like it normally does. So now you have to find out what that reason is. And the vast majority of the time, it's some type of toxicity. That's what's shutting the endocrine system down. In fact, the endocrine system is more susceptible to toxicological insult than pretty much any other organ system in the body, with the exception of perhaps the brain in its developing stages. So you will actually see the thyroid. You will see the adrenal glands. You will see the hypothalamus. You will see the pituitary. You will start seeing all these different, you know, even the sex the sex organs, the testicles, the women will start ending up having anxiety, and they'll have depression, and they'll have vaginal dryness, and they'll have decreased sensation, and all these different components. And it's all because of this imbalance that's thrown off from the hormones, and the hormones are being thrown off because of the heavy metals that are causing the suppression of those metabolic pathways. What people don't realize is that minerals are essential cofactors in these metabolic processes. And what happens is the metals come in, the metals, we know they're toxicological, we know they cause free radical damage, but they also displace the essential minerals and impede these pathways from occurring, impede these minerals acting as cofactors and catalysts, just like a catalytic converter in a car. These minerals are allowing these enzymatic reactions to take place. So if you displace them with metals, it's like throwing a wrench in the engine of the body. The body doesn't work anymore, and now you start having all these hormonal issues that develop.
Right, right. Well, the mineral displacement, as you said, mineral depletion, we come back to the same things, and you know, the solutions, answers, et cetera, all there for fourth, fifth, and sixth graders to get much sooner than the highly developed and degreed medical personnel that have not been trained in this and that have to undo or unlearn so much, which is so difficult for much of that profession. But I think they're going to be forced, if not economically, into saying, well, I better do something else because people aren't coming to see me anymore.
Yep, that's very true.
Yeah. So we got a call here on vaccines. I think we definitely need to take it. I think Mike Adams and I covered this earlier last week about the issue of the danger of vaccines. And we finally came out with the seminar that John Rappaport and I did on vaccines, armed and dangerous, all the things they don't want you to hear. So it's a timely subject. And of course, Dr. Batari, you've written extensively on it as well. So let's go ahead and give a listen to this. Don, go ahead and run that.
Hi, Robert. Congratulations on your one-year anniversary. I absolutely love the show. I've learned so much from you and Mike Adams and all your guests that you have on the show. I love the show. I do have a question on the February 2nd show when you and Mike Adams were talking about the binary bioweapon and getting like the first half in a vaccine. What type of vaccine would that have been, and how long ago would they have been doing that, do you think? Just really curious. I haven't gotten any vaccines in several years, but I don't remember when I stopped getting the vaccines. Anyway, thank you for all your hard work and teaching us so much. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thanks. She didn't even leave her name. I don't know who it was, but I appreciate the gratitude on that end as well. And Dr. Batari, it's not like you don't have any perspective at all on vaccines as bioweapons.
Well, Robert, you know, you and I have discussed this before, too, and I think, you know, as we talk about so many different things when we do talk, I don't know whether it's on the air or not on the air.
I know. It's hard to remember, but I always like – we like to let loose on everything we can, but there's never enough time, even with the hour a week we do together. So the bioweapon concept is a scary one for a lot of people to consider, but the reality is we were talking about the alteration or the binding to the DNA or RNA from the animal proteins and other things that now they're talking about recombinant forms of DNA, like in the HPV Gardasil shot. These could be the first half of environmental triggers as such. And, you know, you've again, covered things like this. What's your perspective?
Well, I think that it goes back even when we look at the H1N1, and I think that to be able to correlate this with media action, such as when, again, I know I've mentioned this before, when Obama was on the air a couple of years ago talking about how he estimated, or how the CDC was estimating, that 60 million Americans were going to die from the H1N1 flu. And if you look at the – I mean 60 million Americans, that's one out of five. The population is around 300 million. Now, why would they be talking about one out of five people dying? Well, because I believe that the H1N1, and as we talked about the story in California when they had that big story that they covered and they were trying to figure out why these 64 cases of H1N1 flus deaths had not been reported, and it was an outrage, and who's trying to suppress this information? And then all of a sudden the story went dead. Why did it go dead? Because all 64 people that died of H1N1 were all 64 people that received the vaccine for H1N1. And the reason that most people did not suffer, and the reason we didn't have 60 million deaths, I believe firmly, is because most people absolutely refused, categorically refused to take the H1N1. Even on media, even on the national TV, they had doctors on there, Dr. 1, Dr. 2, talking about how important it was. And then Dr. 3 would say, well, no, I'm not going to do it. And you'd see the person that was interviewing them look around like, wait a second, is he supposed to say that? I don't think he's supposed to say that. There was so much discourse regarding that vaccine. The New York State had a Supreme Court case filed by the Nursing Association from New York as well as from Washington State because they felt that it was unconstitutional for them to be forced to take this vaccine, and they refused to in masses. Governments from other countries, in Germany, 93% of the population refused to take the vaccine, even despite the fact that the government decided that they were going to pay for the vaccine for the public. I mean, it was all over the world. People refused, and it was mass exodus from this concept of having to take vaccines. I believe that that particular vaccine probably was one of the first components of this binary warfare that you're talking about, the vaccine being used as a dual agent, or the first phase of a two-phase or three-phase weapon, bioweapon. And if you think about it, if we look at H1N1 as being theoretically the first phase, again, I don't have any firsthand knowledge. I want everybody to understand that this is my own belief and my own conspiratorial nature coming out. But if you look at the H1N1, and I have a video actually on our website, it's somewhere in our archives on our blog, but there's the leading researcher for antivirals in the world. He actually is in Australia, and he was a person who developed Tamiflu. He was a researcher who developed Tamiflu. And you hear him being interviewed, and he talks about how the H1N1 bug, when you do a assay on it, it's very unique in the sense that previously you have the bird flu and you have the swine flu and you have the human flu and all these different things. But H1N1 actually had components from all of these different flus. You have the bird flu, the swine flu, and human flu all in the same virus, which is very, very strange. And it doesn't show the normal evolutionary process. It shows a very distinct cut as a splice, a genetic splice. It can only be done by man. And then it also shows the Eurasian strains and the America strains, which have always been separate within the same virus. So all of a sudden, you've got this new virus that comes out. You've got massive lawsuits in Europe for the release of this vaccine. It's found that that Baxter had a patent on H1N1 9 months before the first reported case of H1N1 ever came out. I mean,
That is really important to bring up because it sounds similar to the sudden outbreak of whooping cough in New York outside of Long Island, tied into some reports of massive whatever chemtrail spraying activity, and also in California. And lo and behold, before anybody knows this happens, there's suddenly a surplus of whooping cough vaccine just in the nick of time. Oh my gosh, I wonder we just got lucky.
Yeah, exactly. It's just too many things that make you go, you know what I mean? It's just just too suspect. And so the question when somebody says, as this caller asked, which vaccine would have been, I think it probably started with that H1N1, and it's probably
that
going
seems to
on.
Be, I seem to agree, the next level, so to speak, of the biotechnology and the bioweapon and vaccine industry. We could always go back, and we do, and in the seminar I did with John Rappaport, we go through the whole history of it from the accidental, oops, we think we've discovered something really cool, to the real history of how disastrous the whole vaccine paradigm has been. But now to take it to the level where they're actually recombining DNA sequences, RNA, animal, and combine, seeing how this is happening, it takes it to a completely different level of engineering, and in this case, engineering via an agenda to reduce global population efficiently by a volunteerism, because if they can frighten you enough about a disease to accept the so-called prevention, which actually creates 10, 12, 15 other problems that makes it impossible for you to procreate, then boom, their problem is solved. Plus, they have a whole plethora of millions of more customers guaranteed to be driving for drugs.
And, I think they probably started a lot of this with the military. That's where the Gulf War syndrome came into being.
Right.
I just had a patient from Fayetteville Army, a lady that was in the Army, and her husband's still active duty. One of the things that she was telling me when she was in Iraq, and it's very, very disturbing what she told me, they were taking medications, they were taking drugs, they were being given these drugs, and they would hallucinate at night. Hmm. And she said that she didn't know why they were all being given these medications, but it was not an option. Everybody was required to take these. And she said it was very disturbing, even with the fact that they were told that they needed this to protect themselves. But everybody would have the same type of experience. They were hallucinating. They were confused. And it was almost like they were in a dreamlike state, she told me.
Yeah. And well, it sounds like, you know, some of the scenes I saw in The Men Who Stare at Goats, if you saw that movie with George Clooney, where they were doing the LSD as such. You're right. These experiments have gone on a long time. And I'm glad the caller, you know, brought the questions up, because it's not just – it's a false religion. It's a false perspective that vaccines actually induce immunity. We know that they don't. They actually destroy the immune system. But it is clearly developed into something much worse and more sinister. So we're going to take a break, and we're going to wrap up today's show with Dr. Rashi Batar, Advanced Medicine Monday. After this, remember, sign up for email alerts at naturalnewsradio.com, and all the links right to the best-selling book there, The 9 Steps to Keep the Doctor Away. You can see it where you're listening. If you're downloading this as an archive, right at the top right-hand corner where the archives for the Robert Scott Bell Show are, there's a great link right to the book as well. So stay with us. We're coming right back to wrap it up after this.
The Robert Scott Bell Show.
Hello, this is Jonathan Wagner. We have an internet website, www.choosetobehealthy.com, that carries many of the products discussed on Robert's show, including 100% whole food chromium and selenium, silica, as well as sovereign silver and Nordic naturals. Choosetobehealthy.com features the Rolls Royce of probiotics. It's Dr. O'Hara's probiotics. Dr. O'Hara, a world-renowned microbiologist, formulated a unique probiotic that blends ancient Japanese fermentation methods with 21st century technology. No refrigeration is needed. Dr. O'Hara's probiotics contains the strongest lactic acid bacteria known to man based on scientific laboratory research. 6.25 times stronger. Quite simply, it works and works very well. So go to our website, www.choosetobehealthy.com, or call us toll-free, 866-424-1077. That's 866-424-1077. We're here to help.
With natural and man-made disasters and economic turmoil, if we don't get well prepared, we will most certainly regret it. Good readiness must include storage of high-quality food that will build us up rather than tear us down. Much of the storable food available is full of bad fats, salt, sugar, nutrient-poor refined foods, and even MSG. In response, EnerHealth Botanicals has created our 40-day and 40-night 100% organic preparedness pail. It's GMO-free and has a 10 to 20-year shelf life if stored at 60 degrees or less. Some of the items need cooking, some can be eaten dry, while some can be soaked and sprouted. These are selling out fast at third the price of storable food packages. Call us at 866-762-9238. That's 866-762-9238. Or go to enerfood.com, enerfood.com. 866-762-9238. Or go to enerfood.com.
In the health world through the power of radio. It's the Robert Scott Bell Show.
In the discussion, the chairman of the committee explained that I was off base to talk about the Constitution because he explained it to me. He says that part of the Constitution is anachronistic. We don't follow it anymore. And unfortunately, because they've been able to get away with things like that, whether it's the monetary policy or going to war, this Constitution, in a way, has become anachronistic. If we're going to have rule of law, if we're going to have peace and prosperity, we have to force the people who represent us, the president on down, send only people there who know how to read and know how to understand and will take their oath of office seriously. Yeah.
All right, that's Ron Paul. He was up in Minnesota after the Nevada caucuses, still trying to figure all of that out, what happened in Nevada there. But honestly, yeah, they said this 4 years ago. Dr. Bitar, when he brought up letters of mark and reprisal to say, let's target those who are really responsible for what happened at 9/11. Instead, you can't declare war on the whole country of Afghanistan. There wasn't really a government there that did it. And then they go to Iraq, etc. And they said it was anachronistic, and they're still saying it today. Well, we just pick and choose the parts of the Constitution we want to follow, despite them holding their hand on a Bible, whatever, and saying, I uphold this. They basically discard it the moment they get into office.
You know, there's a great war movie called Kingdom of Heaven, and if anybody ever has a moment, get this movie. It is a beautiful, gorgeous movie. It's got Orlando Bloom in it, but it's called Kingdom of Heaven. Mm-hmm. And if you watch that, it's about the Crusades. And if you watch that and you see how much peace and prosperity there was and how one of the greatest Muslim warrior chiefs, Salah ad-Din, had respect for King George, I think it was. I can't remember which king it was. Mm-hmm. And this was when Jerusalem was under the Christian rule. And the king allowed all those within his city walls, he protected them all, regardless of whether they were Jewish, they were Muslim, they were Christian. They were all allowed to pray, and they were all allowed to observe God in however they felt was appropriate. And he protected everybody. And Salah ad-Din, who could have taken Jerusalem, had a respect for the king, and the king had a respect for Salah ad-Din. So he never invaded until the king died, and then the warmongers wanted to create the war. And then, of course, that's when Muslims took over and came in. It's a interesting historical perspective of how religion has been utilized and to promote war. But it's the same thing that we're doing now. And it may not be based upon religion, but it's the same type of concept where you create an issue. And then you say that, well, these people created the issue, and so we're going to go after those people. But it really has nothing to do with people. You just label those people. Blowback, that video that Ron Paul had, Blowback. Did you
yes.
see that, Robert?
Oh, yes, yes.
It's incredible. He says that, you know, when they were insiders in Washington said about the reason why we invaded Iraq, he said, well, these weapons of mass destruction, we know that Saddam Hussein has them. We have the receipts to show it.
Yeah, well, it's about providing and profiting from both sides of war making. We come back to the international banksters as well that Ron Paul knows about all too well, and that's where the American electorate's starting to wake up slowly but surely that our government has been stolen out from under us. And what you talk about in the way you reference Kingdom of Heaven there, that there was a respect with men of so-called honor, and that you basically lived honorably, you respected a rule of law, and at that point you had a way to peacefully coexist until that honor and these codes would break down. And they've completely broken down when you can basically pick and choose what parts of the Constitution you want to abide by without amending it appropriately, because there is a method by which you can change it. You just don't start ignoring it.
Without a doubt. And you know what? I find the most compelling thing that the military throughout the United States, it is the active duty military, they support Ron Paul. 80% of the active duty votes, or 80% plus of the active duty votes, are all going for Ron Paul. He's dwarfed all the other candidates put together, combined,
including Obama. Now that was a doubling of all of them, including Obama. What should that be telling us? Our warrior class is acknowledging someone who has honor because they are brought in. And we're not so naive to believe that 100% of the people in military are honorable. We know it's just the reflection of all of humanity. But what does that tell you when they're honoring the one man who has honor?
Exactly. And you know, another thing, I do think that it's important to note that Ron Paul is the only candidate that actually served in the military. And I personally feel that that's an important thing for a commander-in-chief to have actually served in the military. I mean, I don't know how you can send people into battle and not have served in the military yourself.
Really good point. Listen, we're trying to walk through life, lead by example, and you do an excellent job doing that, living your life according to what you're teaching and helping people to get well the way we do it every week here on Advanced Medicine Monday. Dr. Bitar, honored and always a pleasure to have you on board. It's a highlight of our week to start it off this way.
Well, Robert, I'm always honored to be here, and I enjoy my time with you on the air and look forward to every week.
Well, we've got lots more healing to do this week, and we'll be hearing from Dr. Bitar from the Land of Oz next week. I'm looking forward to that. And in the meantime, take a deep breath, get out there, have some fun as well, serve, and remember this, that the power to heal is yours.
The Robert Scott Bell Show.
Robert Scott Bell Show.
Hi, this is Joshua.
And Anna Scurry, co-founders of Alive Foundation, and you're listening to The Robert Scott Bell Show. We here at Alive believe in health freedom and God's gift of choice. Alive is a nonprofit organization that will be holding its first annual Celebrity Health and Eco Benefit in New York City.
Why should you support?
This benefit will be centered behind the world's leading natural doctors, celebrities, and organizations that are making a real difference in our world to give the people a voice that has not had a chance to be heard.
Did you know the number one killer in America is suicide by lifestyle from lack of education and know-how? We can change this. Stand with us in this mission of hope and healing to reach at least 1 million people worldwide. Attend the event live or watch it from the comfort of your own home.
Please visit AliveNewYork.org for more information or to make a donation. We cannot do this without you. We the people hold the key to our destiny. Are you willing to unlock the door?
Hi, this is Robert Scott Bell, and I want to tell you about my great friends at EnterFood.com. Like me, the folks at EnterFood are fighting the good fight for your total health freedom. Their super green energy drink, EnterFood, is full of natural ingredients like spirulina and chlorella, which can improve your immune system and detox you from harmful radiation. EnterFood was voted best superfood by Mike Adams and the Southwest College of Naturopathic Medicine. EnterFood.com is one-stop shopping for all your health and survival needs. Try their meal replacement product for those watching their weight. Organic immune support coffee, cocoa, coconut milk powder, and herbal tinctures for your every need. EnterFood.com now has developed a new survival preparedness pail packed with all organic, tasty, non-GMO foods to get you and your family through any disaster. All of these great products are now available to you for a 10% discount when you mention the Robert Scott Bell Show. Call them to order at 866-762-9238. That's 866-762-9238. Or go to our product page at EnterFood.com. That's EnterFood.com.
Scott Bell Show.